Bem-vindos ao podcast JE Entrevista, o programa de entrevistas do Jornal Económico em podcast no Spotify e em todas as plataformas de Silicon Valley para Lisboa. O convidado este mês do Innov Club é Tony Fernandes, CEO e fundador do UE Group, uma agência especializada em soluções globais de inteligência artificial que conta com clientes como a Disney, a Intel e Google, entre outras. Este especialista, que se define no LinkedIn como um AI troublemaker, trouxe ao Innov Club uma visão humanista das grandes transformações tecnológicas e como as empresas não devem esquecer o fator humano que as conduziu até ao ponto em que se encontram. Tony Fernandes fez ainda uma abordagem sobre as grandes transformações tecnológicas que estão a ser desenvolvidas em Silicon Valley e deixou um aviso. A inteligência artificial pode sair mais cara do que o esperado e o fator humano nunca, mas nunca, deve ser descurado. Tony Fernandes foi em si o último convidado do Innov Club, uma colaboração entre a BTI, uma consultora de inovação colaborativa, e a Sociedade de Advogados Vieira de Almeida. O Jornal Económico orgulha-se de ser membro desta iniciativa. Esta entrevista será conduzida em inglês, apesar de Tony Fernandes ter sangue português. So, bem-vindo, Tony Fernandes. I will start to ask you if you are quite surprised with this AI hysteria that we live right now.
Am I surprised? No, because it's one of many hysterias that have happened with technology. I mean, I can remember when the web first took hold and everybody had to have a website, and there was the famously the .com crash, and everybody was trying to get on board that gold rush. There were winners, there were losers, and but it's important to realize all the failures along the way. You know, companies saying everybody was going to have 3D television. It didn't really happen. The Google Glass, and you know, you're going to have this device, you know, that's going to see everything. There's a lot.
Everything will be virtual in the future.
Exactly. I mean, it even starts with the paperless office of 40 years ago. I still have papers in my office. So so I'm not surprised by the hysteria. I am surprised, though, by what I would describe as the level of ignorance that a lot of companies have about what it truly means and what it truly is. Because I think a lot of businesses are talking about it, but they don't really know what they're talking about.
So it lacks that kind of information that comes to which we can say, like you talk in this session about the AI washing, right?
Yes, everybody feels like they need to get on board, and so everybody is claiming that they do AI, but the reality of what AI is has been around for several decades. It has never really penetrated until ChatGPT came along. It has, you know, to use your word, it has created a level of hysteria. But I think it's, in some ways, it's more benign than people are hysterical about. And by that I mean, there's people predicting the end of civilization and everybody's going to lose their job. I think that's way overspoken. Also, the value that people, that businesses are envisioning is going to introduce to them, they haven't realized that if they are using an AI process and their competitor is using the exact same AI process, where's the competitive difference going to come from? You know, they haven't really started thinking through the real implications of what this means. And plus, it's really very early in the process. And this software in general is not reliable yet. And it is just that. It's software, it has bugs, it crashes, and all that good stuff that we love.
So you brought some vision to this session, which is quite realistic about the future and the present of technology. So do you think that our companies are ready to hear that EI will be extremely expensive, like you mentioned.
Mm-hmm. I think companies are largely not living in reality right now. I don't think they really understand what it means financially, legally, from an employment standpoint. It's going to take some time. You know, hysteria is hysteria. There's a panic and there's a lot of moving around. But it'll take some time and things will settle down and actually, I think, progress a lot more slowly than people are envisioning now.
So the dust will go down and then everything will appear like they really are.
The hype will go down and then reality will set in. I expect in the intervening time, we'll probably have some significant disasters. Brands that bet too heavily on AI that they come to regret. And so there'll be some adjustments that are going to happen from some of the failures yet to come.
Mm-hmm. So in a personal note, and it gave me some comfort to hear someone who has a very rich past in the technology world to say that human factors should be always considered to conduct all this technology.
Mm-hmm.
That gave me, personally, that gave me some comfort. Do you think that it will be like this in the present and in the future?
In a way, it has to be because historically the market has dictated it. The solutions that people ultimately adopt are convenient, they're easy, because we're all lazy. We don't want to work really hard at doing things. And technology that hasn't been shaped around people in a meaningful way has not succeeded ultimately. You know, things like the iPhone and a lot of the smartphones that we use were successful because a lot of work went into the human factors aspects of those solutions. It's not necessarily very visible to people, but there's a humanistic aspect that says it's the right thing to do. But beyond that, what's going to make it happen for sure is there's a profit motive to doing it. The ultimate goal of any new product or service is adoption. And history has shown that if people feel like something is too much work, even though it's better, perhaps a better solution for them, they just won't adopt it because it's not worth the hassle.
Mm-hmm. So we need humans to arbitrate this technology.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah,
it will be like this in the future.
It absolutely
it should be, right.
I mean, to a certain extent. I mean, so you know, we're recording this now using digital media. None of us are going to take a look at the algorithm, its sampling rate, and those kinds of issues. We don't care. We just want it to work. There will always be an element of us just relying on technology to do the right thing, whether it's helping us drive the cars, etc. When we talk about doing things like using tools like artificial intelligence, where you say rely on artificial intelligence to figure out your retirement funding and saving the money for you and stuff, I think that's where the trust is going to break down.
Yeah.
You know, when we deal with finance, when we deal with personal health, you know, you don't want to go into the hospital, put your fingerprint down, and something says, well, okay, you're going to die in 5 hours, get lost. You know, not very satisfying. You want to talk to a human about it, right? So there will always be areas where that trust will never be there.
Or emotions.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
You speak about that.
Yes. People's emotional reaction to this technology is going to be critical in terms of managing it. I think where AI can begin to replace certain kinds of activity is what I would describe as the bottom of the market in terms of people not caring about the quality of what gets produced. So it generating a video automatically that's not great, but it's good enough to give your, you know, your nephew as a birthday thing. Yeah. That's totally fine. A production of high quality, like a movie, you know, the trust is never going to be there to somehow automate that completely. Plus, there's no opportunity to add the artistic flair that makes people feel a certain way about, you know, entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Although companies should consider the possibility to manage this whole AI environment, possibly hiring a chief AI officer.
Yes.
So that's a very realistic approach to what the companies should do concerning this technological steps that they would like to follow.
Well, I don't know if they should do, but it is definitely happening in the United States now. There are companies hiring.
It's a 12-month trend, right? Mm-hmm, like you said. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Will it last? I don't know. I mean, there's not chief web officers or, you know, that kind of thing. There are barely chief product officers and chief experience officers that are, you know, these non-traditional roles. I expect that, in all honesty, I think it's a role that probably has a limited lifetime, because ultimately it's just software, and roles like chief technology officer and you know, vice presidents of engineering and those kinds of roles are going to have more of a say in what ultimately happens than the continuation of that role. My opinion, who knows? But I don't see it's going to continue to exist 5 to 10 years from now.
Okay. In my opinion, one of the most important things that you have mentioned in your intervention, it was some examples that you gave that companies that develop products to appeal to the human emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of some companies which might appear that are creating something technologically more advanced or mm-hmm. something. We spoke about this in previous questions, but how important it is to companies not to lose the focus on the people and in mm-hmm. the emotions and the trust and everything. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think when we deal with technology, a big problem that occurs with companies is they get fascinated about the possibilities and they ask the question, can we create this? Sort of like, you know, Frankenstein asked that question.
Yes.
Can we bring, you know, dead people to life? And companies can sometimes get lost in that question and forget the more important question, which is, should we build such a thing? And the question of should comes from a need of what people actually are willing to adopt, what will improve their lives, and ultimately be of substantial value that, from a business standpoint, people are willing to give money, right? I mean, it takes a little, we all hate change, and we ignore all these emails with all these offers all the time, and people show you a better way of doing a thing, and you're like, yeah, I like the way I do it, don't bother me with that. That's the natural human inclination. So for a technology to be not only something that people adopt, but are willing to give money for, it really has an extremely high threshold in terms of value and convenience. And if a company doesn't address that from the very beginning and just does, in essence, a science experiment for themselves, they can't expect it to ever generate anything of significance for them.
So maybe companies should consider to hire a human emotions officer.
Well, maybe. That sounds like a great job. I like that idea.
A difficult one, but necessary.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Why do you say that companies have stopped to innovate?
Because what's interesting is when I first got into technology, it was really early in the PC revolution. And everything had to be invented. I, as part of my job, had to invent things as part of you know, user interfaces, things that we still use today, because we had no choice. There was no other model to follow. And I think what's happened over the last few decades is the way the education system works in relation to technology is that people start from a baseline of not invention, but of status quo. Okay, there are websites, so what can you do with a website? They don't question, should there be websites? Can we do something else using the internet protocols that are available? They don't question, you know, the use of icons on, you know, mobile phones, etc. There's mobile apps, that's what it is, you know? And so there's not a lot of questioning in the same way that there was at the beginning of my career. And because of that, I just think a lot of people coming out of universities that work in technology just don't know to ask the fundamental questions anymore. Why am I doing this? Why is this the right answer? Are there other answers that are better to this, better than this, and not, you know, and those questions not being posed on the status quo, going what people used to call going down to the bare metal. I mean, there were companies, you know, back in the day that would build applications, stripping out the operating system and everything. They would just start from the machine and build something. And you never see that now. There's all of these now layers of technology that people assume is there, and they don't question any of it. And I think that's really the core reason why I believe there's much less innovation than there used to be.
So is there a need to develop the human intelligence before you should consider some artificial intelligence?
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, it's a scary thing that we are building artificial intelligence capabilities on a status quo situation that I would argue is not that great. So, you know, I was privileged to be part of the design of the web browser. And the web browser is a really valuable thing. But you go up there, you know, you type https://, you miss a slash and it does nothing. you miss the H, it does nothing. I mean, it's so cryptic and old. It's completely broken. And to, you know, start from there to then build technologies without fixing some of these fundamental things is only going to lead to, you know, problems later on in my mind.
So you have said something in this session that you consider that companies have stopped to talk the language of business.
Yes.
The business impact, and instead they are somehow addicted to innovation language, like mm-hmm. they were all tech mm-hmm. and everything.
Yeah.
So that's the fundamental thing, you know.
Yeah.
When they stopped.
I mean, think about all this. We have AI, and now this has AI. It's a technical conversation. Why do you care whether your car, when you turn the steering wheel, is powered by AI or not? Who cares? These are companies that are putting technology into the forefront of the conversation rather than solutions, right? Okay. I would much rather hear we've cured cancer than, our thing has AI in it.
Yeah.
I just think it's crazy. It's really comes from a place, I think, of marketing hype more than anything. But I think it distracts from the true potential that technology can have.
Mm-hmm. When we hear some technological specialists, we've never heard about terms like fear, uncertainty, and doubt. You have brought these terms to your mm-hmm. to this session. Should these expressions be more used and not to be repressed like they are nowadays?
Yeah, I think, I think there's this fantasy about startups and technology that I think is the same fantasy about people going to Hollywood and becoming movie stars.
Yes.
You know, it's like you show up and you wind up working at a McDonald's, you know, for 5 years and
you
go to Hollywood.
That, you said that Silicon Valley is a history of failures.
Yeah, it is a tremendous history of failures. Yeah. As I like to say, the roads are made out of the ground up little pieces of companies. I mean, there are so many failures there. I forget the question.
About the fear, fear, uncertainty, and doubt.
Okay. You better do some good editing. Okay. So I think the fantasy gives way to the reality that it's difficult to start a business. It's even more difficult to have a successful business. And it's even more difficult than that to maintain a business being successful. And if your customers or clients are not a struggle for you, then your competitors are. If you come up with something that's brilliant and amazing, that means that very day about 5 other people are now starting to copy you and maybe even have better ideas. So you're constantly in this situation of wondering who's going to come next, how you're going to react to the changes, how you're going to deal with the demands. And so I think it's critical, especially for people that envision themselves being entrepreneurs, that they realize that fear and doubt and uncertainty will always be there. And that's, and if they're not willing to sign up for that, if they think it's about starting a company and they get to go off to a tropical island, then they need to find another line of work.
So it's all about trust and emotions in the end of the day. Something very, very interesting also that it was approached in this session, it was the difference between the values between European countries and mm-hmm. America. And you said that European countries could have some values that could be important in the future mm-hmm. of technology. Mm-hmm. Can you explain us a little bit?
Sure. I would say, I would say that American society is much more individualistic than European society. I'd say European society is much more collaborative and likes to generate opinions as a group and come to consensus. I think that those are tremendous strengths when you think about the ability for technology to interconnect people and the potential that that could have, as opposed to looking at technology as an isolated thing that an individual does.
Okay.
I think there are values that Europe and European companies could exploit that I think arguably are a better foundation than a lot of American companies. Unfortunately, that hasn't been fully taken advantage of, in my opinion. I think some of that simply comes from the fact that a lot of European companies, Portuguese companies, mm-hmm. have a lot of self-doubt that is hard for them to get over. And, and I think part, at least, of American culture is kind of this, what they would describe as the devil may care attitude of like, let's just do it, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's harder for Europeans, but I continue to believe there's a tremendous amount of potential, unrealized potential, until European companies understand what is unique about them, about their culture, and how that could be embodied in how they think about products and technology.
You said also that technology is leverage right now, mm-hmm. and that Portuguese technological companies could get some advantages mm-hmm. with that.
Yeah, I think when I meet with people in Portugal and I talk to software engineers or whatever, I don't see anything holding back any company here from being a global player. I do think that I don't hear companies talking in those terms. They companies here tend to think very domestically, or mm-hmm. When they think internationally, that means Portugal and Spain. You know, that's international.
Yes, yes.
So I think that's a problem. I think the other area that I think could improve here as well is what I would describe as project management. You know, just driving a project to completion and, you know, doing that kind of time management. Because for good or for bad, growing up as a Portuguese person, mm-hmm. kind of in the U.S., you know, I can recognize things about, you know, that culture versus the American culture. And I think one of the things I recognize in the Portuguese part of me is that life can be an approximation, you know, if you're Portuguese. It's not about exact, and that's whether it's time, whether it's about, you know, a particular point. It's kind of like, it's kind of it's kind of around there, you know, that's good enough. I think that tendency is not a good one for the precision that something like technology needs. Software doesn't have approximation. It has to be exact.
Accurate.
Yeah. So I think there's some areas there where I think it really comes down to the education system. But the reality is I've seen a lot of improvements even over the last decade here.
Okay. A more human technology without AI washing. Muito obrigado, Tony Fernandes. Esta foi uma entrevista no âmbito do Inove Club, uma colaboração entre a BTI e a Sociedade de Advogados Vieira de Almeida. Acompanhe estes e outros temas no podcast JE Entrevista e toda a atualidade em jornaleconomico.pt. Até à próxima.